Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, and Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Gentlemen, I'm Alfred Addisk, and this is Financial Survival for Friday, the 7th day of June, year of our Lord, 2013. I'm here with Roger Sales. He will be my Roger S. Sales. He will be our foreign correspondent and co-host for the balance of the program. Once I get done reading the market reports, gold went down $35 today. To $1,379.70 an ounce. Silver off 99 cents to $21.70. Platinum down $31 to $1,503 per ounce. Palladium is down $5 to $761 per ounce. Over in the equities market, Dow Jones is up 195 points to 15,235. NASDAQ is up 45 points to 3,470. New York Stock Exchange up 72 points to 9,333. U.S. dollar index is up 0.12. Now, U.S. dollar index suffered a 1.01 decline yesterday. And today it's up only 0.12. It's down to 81.66, which isn't much. And it makes the fall in the price of gold and the fall in the price of silver, for example, it raises questions. Are these true free market declines or are they manipulated? If the dollar is only up 0.12 after yesterday's fall of over an entire 1 point, rather than, you know, tenth of a point. Does it make sense that gold would fall $35 today in the natural order of things in a free market, or is it evidence of a manipulation being perpetrated by the powers that be? Crude oil is up $1.36 to $96.12 per ounce. What can you say? Here we are. It's another day in the metals markets, and manipulation is the name of the game, or at least it appears to be to me. What do you think about that, Roger? This is Roger Sales, of course, from calling in from Argentina.
See, I got two hats today. I'm a guest host and a foreign correspondent. I think we've been done gone through the looking glass.
And what do you mean?
I think it's Alice in Wonderland time, and none of this stuff makes sense, and it's unbelievable. To the ordinary person, none of it make sense. Even to the somewhat educated, it's difficult to make sense of it. But in this little slap down today on gold, a Friday, our first Friday edition, I guess ever, Al.
Yep.
And it's very interesting to me because now you come back with this question. Who's slapping it down, the Fed or the Chinese?
Well,
or both.
Yeah, I understand.
I mean, you know, really. And it's just very interesting and no doubt for some people very perplexing. If you understand the fundamentals, it's not too perplexing. You just go back the truck up.
I agree, and buy as much as you can afford to lay hands on. Do you think this is evidence of the power that's available to the manipulators? They can slap gold down $34 or $35 in a single day and knock it down with impunity. And it's not just that they do it; they do it with and they do it in a way that's overt. They barely bother to deny that they're manipulating the market. It's obvious to anybody who looks at it that it's at least highly probable they're manipulating. So are we looking at evidence of the enormous power of the people that are trying to manipulate this market, or are we looking at evidence of their enormous desperation? Are they grasping at straws right now and just...
Yeah, I think their backs are right in a tight corner and have been for a while, and I think you are seeing some desperations. When you talk about power, I mean, the only power is that they control the regulatory agencies, and they look the other way and let these guys place these huge futures bets on the paper metals markets. I mean, that's the amount of the power. Yes, it's control, certainly. But I was listening to something today, and some scholarly guy had done some research, and he said the big knockdown in April was 14 times bigger than any single entity could do, and that you couldn't get around that with positioning rules unless it was this case we're talking about.
And when you say this case you're talking about, do you mean it couldn't have been done by private entities? It had to be done or at least coordinated by the government?
Well, the regulatory agencies had to look the other way not to pick it up.
Well, okay. All right, I see.
Okay. So, anyway, it's interesting. You know, there's times when everything is breaking out like everywhere, okay? You know, I was going to say very facetiously today, it's too bad we don't have anything to talk about.
Uh-huh.
But it's just unbelievable to look around and see some of the things that are happening. I was just looking at an article right on Drudge in Detroit. The cops are staging a purse snatch, so they can alert a film crew to film it so they can use it on the TV news. And it's cops doing the snatch at a gas station. And an FBI guy is pumping gas and sees the snatch and doesn't realize it's a thing and pulls his gun and almost blows away one of the cops.
Oh, my God.
And flashed his badge in front of him. Now, can you imagine? In Detroit, it's like, you know, 7-Eleven robbings are probably fairly commonplace.
I tell you what is uncommon. Apparently, they've done such a good job of recruiting police with a low IQ. That what is uncommon is a police officer with an IQ a point above average. None of the police officers with a reasonable IQ participated in this alleged plan where we will feign a purse snatching.
In 10 years ago when I was in the States, I had a neighbor who was down there in Florida who had a little house down there who was right next to the sheriff in one of the larger South Georgia towns. And he told me 10 years ago, he said, they won't hire anybody with an IQ above 100.
Yeah. Well, you know, I understand that that's dangerous to the people, but it even has to be dangerous to the cops.
Sure.
I mean, do you really want a moron for your partner in case you get into a gunfight? Hire the handicapped is an interesting idea, but when you are in situations where the handicapped might be shooting at their own partners, and that's not unusual. Back in the 1990s, I know that reports indicated a third of the officers shot in the line of duty. And police work, policemen,
yeah.
A third of them were shot by other police officers.
Wow.
So if you tried to calculate the gang that was most responsible for killing police officers back in the day.
It was those guys in blue.
It was the cops. Or anything like that. It was the cops. They were the ones that were statistically most likely to shoot other cops. And that's why we disarm them in order to protect the cops. We need to disarm them.
So is the blue guys, are they the Crips or the Bloods? I guess they're the Crips.
Well, the Bloods, I think, are red. I don't know.
So yeah, you go. That would be logical.
Yeah, so I suppose the cops would be, I don't know, the Crips, some variation, the Crips Auxiliary or something. I'm not sure.
Well, they're not the farm team, that's for sure.
I understand, but it's and you have idiots. When you have people that aren't that bright, that are making policy and deciding what to do, and it's not just a question of shooting at people, deciding who to shoot. It goes to what kind of mess you get into, like this. These people almost got shot.
You see, what happens is this. When you take
an idea, why don't we pretend to be purse snatchers?
Right,
you know,
right.
The world is armed right now.
See, the problem is this. You're moving from, and I, you know, it's good that we kind of got off on this today because I've been thinking about this a little bit lately. I remember something John told us a long time ago. It's kind of always stuck with me. And he said, the battle we're in today is the age-old battle between lex rex and the common law. And what that means is lex rex is the law of the king, what the man says it is, versus the common law, or what God's nature and nature's laws, all right? And that's the age-old battle, and we're in it right here again today. And when you cross that line from these, if I drop this apple, it's going to hit the ground type things, and you cross that line over into this, what this guy here says, I can't spit on the sidewalk, or he's going to do this to me, or I can't smoke this marijuana cigarette, or whatever it is that man-made laws do, that's the difference. It's lex rex versus the common law.
The question boils down, we can say lex rex versus the common law, but from my perspective, what it boils down to is who to boss.
Yeah,
that's
well,
what
that's
comes
it.
Down to. Who
sure.
is who is in control here? Is it we the people, or is it them the government? Who is the boss? And the government wants to insist that they are in charge, and the Constitution and Supreme Court cases say, no, we the people are the sovereigns. We're the boss.
Yeah, and the thing is the collective, the we the boss type thing has to be a collective of individuals.
Well, I object to the word collective at all times. I never like that because that's what communism, socialism,
sure.
democracy, these are all collectivist forms of government. The Republican form of government is something entirely different. It was based on the idea of, in a collectivist form of government, to clarify, the collective is the sovereign, and the individuals are nothing but cogs in the wheel. And that's true in communism, socialism, democracy. The collective, the will of the collective is expressed by voting, and we're supposed to do whatever the collective wants because the collective is the sovereign. And that's the reason I object to sovereign, that word. I try to stay away from it. But in form of government guaranteed in the Constitution, we the people are sovereign as individuals. You're sovereign,
correct.
I'm a sovereign,
and
the guy across the street's sovereign.
And we're united together in that group, if you will, but you're still exercising your individuality, okay? And see, communism takes the exact opposite slant. They want you in the herd mentality, not thinking individualistically, because then you're subject to herd mentality. And herd mentality, group mentality, is a whole area of psychology very well found and documented.
Well, you know, when you you talked a little bit about when you said we are lex rex versus common law, and the issue comes down from, at least the way I would interpret it, who's the sovereign? I read a verse in the Bible in the last couple of weeks that rang my bell. I'd seen it before and missed it, but like a lot of things, you know, you read this stuff and you don't see significance that later on you read it and say, oh, wait a second, gee, how'd I miss that? It's verse 22 of Isaiah chapter 33. And it says, for the Lord is our judge, the Lord is our lawgiver, the Lord is our king. He will save us. The reason that's significant to me, the judge corresponds to our judicial branch of system, the lawgiver corresponds to our legislative branch of the government, and the king corresponds to our executive branch of government. And I know that God in the Bible is the sovereign over the entire universe. So he combines all three fundamental powers, the executive, the legislative, and the judicial power, are all operating in the good Lord. But when we get down here, the government tried to divide those powers. And the result would be, if we can believe, if the Bible is true, that all three powers are found in the sovereign, by dividing into three different branches of government, they deprived the government of its claim to sovereignty. The government, however, has worked to get around that by establishing administrative law. And if you read a chapter of administrative law that's found in American jurisprudence, you'll see they say repeatedly that administrative law combines all three fundamental powers of government under one authority. You've got executive, legislative, and judicial all working under the same roof, all working together. The implication is that when you recombine all three of those fundamental powers, under administrative law, you reconstitute the administrative agency, the government, as the sovereign. You follow what I'm saying there, Roger?
I not only do I follow it exactly. And you see, that's what my book and my affidavit did, is I went, just like a corporation, which it is, I went to the head office of the corporation, like, let's say, in an analogy here, of the personnel department, and I went up to them and gave them this affidavit and said, I don't work for you anymore. Okay, and then I went back down to the department I worked in, and the guy, and I told them, I said, hey, I just told the personnel department up there I don't work here anymore, and I'm serving you, buddy. And you go, you can take this thing like a zipper, all right? And you get up there and put this at the head of a passport application, your declaration, because this is your right. This is your choice. You just never knew you had it before, okay? And you get that thing filed, and you get that passport back, and you get it on their records, and then you take the head of that zipper, and you just zip it right down that list of 256 administrative agencies. And you had to put every one of them on notice that the State Department has agreed with you that they don't have any jurisdiction over you. And you let the guy in Washington know, you let the district director know, you let the local guy know, and if you got one of these little dingbats dinging you, you go let him know. Because as soon as they're noticed, now if they come after you, they're out of their delegated responsible duties. And now they are liable personally.
So what you're saying is that it's possible to just quit the racket. I quit.
Well, it
That's
looks
all.
Like it to me.
I quit.
I mean, you know.
I quit.
Listen,
goodbye. But you got to give them notice. You can't just not show up for work.
Well,
you got to give them notice.
That's because it's due process, notice, and the right to be heard. You give them notice, and if they object and they can beat what you're telling them, they trump it with another affidavit. And you know what? They never do. They roll over and roll over in the corner, and they don't even whimper.
I understand.
And then you get that passport and that documentation back, and you trot your little fanny right down to your state driver's license division, and you go up there and plop those documents down and tell them you would like to be issued a non-resident state-issued driver's license. Por favor. Please. And they'll do it.
And you know what's nice about that statement? We can say por favor here in this country, and the government will respond to that.
Well, it's probably a choice.
Yeah. You have the opportunity to not only speak in English, which may be your native tongue, but for Spanish, dial one,
hey,
maybe
I
two.
Told you, I don't know. My Spanish is good enough. I qualify as an illegal immigrant now.
Oh, that's a good idea. You get yourself a green card.
I can maybe get double hits, be a double dipper on my Social Security, Al.
Yeah.
They got some house up there in Austin that got $98 million in checks through it or something. I mean, I just want a little bit of that.
Yeah, I understand. Take a half a percent, you know, I'm good.
Yeah, man.
A half a percent of 98
million. Unlike our enemies, I'm not greedy.
I'll tell you what, though, Roger, we're going to take a break for some commercial announcements. I'm Al Stadus here with Roger's S. Sales on Financial Survival. We will be back in a moment. Please stay tuned.
don't make the aspirin mistake. Aspirin was discovered by mistake during World War II and suppresses your immune system and prevents blood clotting. Don't expose your body to risk when you can use a natural inflammation and pain reliever called Extra Strength Pain Relief by Apothecary Herbs. Discover the power this formula has with Salicin to enter the system in 60 seconds to work hard and relieve pain for 12 hours. Whether it's arthritis, sports injury, or flu, you can relieve aches, pain, and swelling with our Extra Strength Pain Relief formula. Call Apothecary Herbs now, toll-free, 866-229-3663. That's 866-229-3663. International callers dial 704-875-8010 or order online at www.thepowerherbs.com.
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, and Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
American Voice Radio Network is heard on Galaxy 19 at 97 degrees west, transponder 23, frequency 12115, audio PID 2595. AVR is heard on the left side audio channel, and AVR 2 is heard on the right side audio channel. Remember, both AVR and AVR 2 are on Galaxy 19. Same network, double the choices.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Addis here at Financial Survival with my co-host Roger S. Sales calling in from Argentina. I want to remind you, programs brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver at 1-800-375-4188. Given the price decline, $35 today. Great opportunity. Back up the truck, as Roger was saying earlier in the program, back up the truck and buy all you can. Price is down again. It's a good buying opportunity. Everything I see, and I know there's mixed emotion about this, mixed opinion, is the price of gold going up. There are some people who think it's going to go down a couple hundred dollars. Some people make that allegation. It may drop down in the 1,100 range before we're done. Nothing is impossible, but everything I see indicates that it has to go higher and perhaps dramatically higher and perhaps in the near future. Certainly, a year from now, I'm unable to imagine that the price of gold isn't higher and perhaps substantially higher than it is today. 6 months, it probably will be, could be in 60 days. Hard to say where this is going for absolute certainty, but long-term trend remains. Gold has to go up, 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 and also up. All right, Roger, where are we going from here? Should we talk about this?
I was just going to say that, you know, that's a differential in the people that look at technical analysis or the charts and stuff and try, you know, Elliott wave theory and all that fancy stuff, or the ones that look at fundamentals. And if you look at the fundamentals and see what's going on with the money printing and the bond markets all over the world, there's not too much real doubt about what's happening. And see, when you start looking at fundamentals here, just like when you start looking at the basics in the law, you go back and give yourself a very clear picture that they can't obfuscate as easily.
I agree. There's never a guarantee on any of this sort of thing. The only thing you can expect when you listen to programs like this, for example, or when you engage in a particular legal strategy. If you're being sued or you're suing someone and you employ a particular strategy, the only thing you can expect and hope for is that whatever you're listening to will increase the probability that your legal strategy will work. It will increase the probability that your investment will be successful. But there's never a guarantee, and there can't be, because unless you can read the future, no one knows for sure what's going to happen tomorrow. We have a good idea sometimes, but we don't know.
There's not much better bet out there, and I'm not a betting guy. You know, I go to Vegas for 3-4 days and do nothing but eat and watch people gamble. I just don't like to lose. But this gold and silver thing is a pretty sure bet in my mind, personally, and I've rolled my dice over in that corner, I can tell you that, and I did it a long time ago, and it's paid off very handsomely for me, because over that period of time when I first moved down here, before I got to back access to the money they took from me when I was youthful, I had to sell gold to live, all right? And what has happened in the price differential in that time frame is the gold that I had to sell to live, the amount that I had originally, has far surpassed because the value of it so much higher.
Yeah.
So it's been a very interesting thing. I'll tell you something else that I'm really starting to be cognizant of, Al, is this exchange rate differential. And, man, I'm telling you what, at 10 to 1, which is what I got the last time I got some dollars down here, it makes a considerable difference. Because now when I go to the store and look at something, let's say it's 35 pesos, I look at it as $3.50.
Okay? You're telling us that the official exchange rate is what?
Five. It's a little over five.
And but you're able to get 10 to 1 essentially on the black market, true?
Correct.
So you're getting 10 pesos for every dollar instead of 5. The government says you only get 5 pesos per dollar, but the people say, no, we'll give you 10 for a dollar.
Yeah, that's correct. And it's only going to get worse. Now, you know, I sent out, I don't remember if we talked about this last week, we weren't on Tuesday, but there was an Ann Barnhart video floating around. I think it was the first of this week. Did you happen to see it? I'm sure I sent it to you.
I've seen one of hers recently, and you may have sent it to me. It'd be about 10 days ago, something like that. She's a really brilliant woman.
Boy, she's sharp, man. I'll tell you what.
I understand.
She is one of the sharp knives in the drawer, okay?
Absolutely.
And in the middle of that video, she said something that startled me. She said, Argentina will be the first country that goes down. And she cited an example of how they're trying to, and I don't know the specifics on this, I only know the generality, something with people in arrears or whatnot, they make you buy bonds or they're threatening you with jail time, okay? And so obviously the international community's not too fond of Argentine bonds when they're forcing you and threatening you with jail time, the people to buy them, okay? So that's not exactly a good sign. And I know what's going on with this exchange rate and everything here and the situation they're in. So that's only going to get more acute before some type of devaluation. So now it's going to go to 15 or 20 to 1. I mean, you know, you start thinking a little bit forward. So let's even think forward more than that. As this whole thing crashes, Argentina, with its absolutely bountiful resources, okay, and a history of this sort of thing approximately every 10 years for the last 100 years, and a population that, because of that history, is very resilient, you know, this seems to me like one of the places to be for the future.
Yeah. Well, if I agree, we talked about this a little bit in the past. 90% of the population, according to one graph I sent down to you, 90% of the population is located in the northern hemisphere of
the
world.
That's a scary statistic, isn't it?
It's almost bizarre. It's like saying the south of the equator is virtually uninhabited.
Well, you sent me that. I had never seen that before. And I mean, I opened it up that morning. I went, holy smokes. I sent it out to my whole email list because that's what I've been saying for years. Okay, I didn't know the statistic was that far skewed. But I know that right now that northern hemisphere is probably, you know, at least my way of thinking, not the place to be. Okay.
Well, if there's any sort of a problem, worst case scenario, nuclear war. All right, I don't anticipate one, but nevertheless, if you're concerned about nuclear war, if you're even concerned about nuclear pollution from a place like Fukushima, the most significant parts of that pollution, the most significant consequences of that war will all be in the Northern Hemisphere. Nobody is going to bomb Argentina. Nobody's going to nuke Argentina. Nobody's going to nuke Africa. It's improbable. It's remotely possible. Australia might see a little bit of damage, but for the most part, everybody's up north of the equator, and that's where all the trouble's going to be. So the implication is, pack your bags, head south.
Right? Well, it's pretty nice down here, senor.
Mm-hmm. I understand.
And this is a very special little area, too, and there's got to be some kind of meridians or something. It's a very spiritual area in the ancient Indians. And this is another thing I've been getting into recently, because we're, you know, you and I are both very religiously, spiritually, I think is a better description, spiritually oriented and bent because of our experiences. But and our Christian religions, you know, a couple thousand years old, but what about the thousands of years before that in the other parts of the world? I mean, you can't discount Hinduism and the Buddhists and all the Incas and these wonderful Indian tribes that inhabited this whole part of the world and all that. They had a context with some sort of a higher being and a religious type experience and a spirituality too. And I'm trying to kind of explore a little bit of that, actually, and I find it very interesting.
Well, I don't doubt that it's interesting. But I also wonder how long would it take you to think to achieve some depth in
studies? Well, I don't know. I'm just going to try. You know, it's a part of this. For all these years, we started in this studying the technicalities, how the slave structure was built. And in our studies, we came upon this little gem of spirituality that became so important to both of us. And in the end, it was the sword that both of us smited our enemy with, or however you say that word.
We used to smite the SOBs.
We did, and we both achieved that coming from opposite directions. And that's what makes our little union here and our experiences combined so unique. Okay, because we've got very unique viewpoint. And so we both...
but experience and evidence.
Yes.
A lot of people have unique viewpoints, but not so many of them have real evidence that they can point to and say, ha-ha, this works.
Yeah, exactly. And so along in that maze, we found this little gem of spirituality, and we nurtured it, and it carried us to our goal. But we were still wrapped up in the technical aspect. And now I want to move over into the pure spiritual aspect. That's the next step that I'm trying to take. Now I'm working with my buddy Diego down here. You spoke with him on the phone briefly the other day. And it's very interesting in just the little bit I've gotten into it. And, I mean, I tell you, I can feel the difference, okay, already.
Do you see any danger in this?
No.
Because I'm sure that there would be some people that would sit back and say, if you were going to explore... some of the spirituality of another religion.
Well, no, because
some people would say that you're getting into something demonic rather than rather than Christian. Or
and
if someone was a Muslim, they'd say the same thing. Or if someone was a Jew, might say the very same thing.
I've done a lot of thought on this. I'm glad you brought it up. I think it really boils down to your character. Okay, because you can take something like that and put it into somebody that isn't strong of will or character, double-minded, if you want to put it that way, and they can deviate off of that path. But if you're strong of character and will, and you know what you're after and your goal is oriented and set correctly, I think you are perfectly safe. I feel that way anyway.
I follow what you're saying. I understand, and it's an intriguing idea, and it's also a little bit of a scary idea.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I'm sure some people would look at this and they would sit back and say, I don't know if I want to try that or not.
This is an interesting thing, fear, this fear thing. You know, fear is, at a sales trainer one time that said fear was fantasized experiences appearing real. And those are those things that stop you in your tracks like a deer in the headlight when you come up to something that you're fearful of. All right. And I'll give you a perfect personal example. For years, I was scared to interact with the federal government and apply for a passport under that status. But when I finally made the decision to move to Argentina and I was committed to do it, and I had to step through that, not only did I get rid of my fear, I found out it was not only a totally useless blockage that I had put in front of myself, but it held me from discovering one of the greatest discoveries that I've ever had in my entire life. and that led to this book and the further things that we've discovered subsequently. And all of that was stopped for years because I was fearful of going and sending for a passport application. And that's what fear does for you. It stops you in your tracks. And many times in people's lives, when you walk through that and you look back and you go, what in the heck was I scared of that for? Look what I found. Okay.
Well, fear is inversely proportional to your faith. And I've said it for years. I don't know. I've understood it for 10, 15 years. But your fear, to the extent you feel fear, it's evidence that your faith is not particularly strong. And when you completely succumb to fear, it's evidence that you're just completely out of faith. On the other hand, if your faith is strong, and as it grows stronger, your fear diminishes, in part because if you come to believe, if your faith leads you to believe that there is a next life, at that point in time, this one becomes something like an illusion or a dream, a little nightmare you might have had when you were a child that you can't even remember anymore. And at the time, you might have seen the boogeyman in your dream and gone running down the hall to climb in bed with your mom. But as you get older, you don't even remember you had that little dream. In the same sense, this entire life could be a little bit of a nightmare for a lot of people.
It is.
But if they really have faith, when they wake up in the next life, they will soon forget this life even happened. In the context of eternity, this life is a triviality. It's a fly speck on the wall. It's, you know, and I mean, the day will come when you don't even remember. They're going to say to you, Roger, do you remember when you're doing those radio programs with Al Addisk? And you'll say,
who?
Radio?
Who
radio?
Who
the heck is radio?
Who
it, won't be just, it won't be just me you can't remember. The radio programs you can't remember. You'll be, well, what are you talking about, radio?
Well, you know, Al, I thought that the best way I've ever heard it put was the way Pastor Peters used to put it. And he used to say, you serve the one you fear.
Yeah. I think that's probably true.
Pretty profound statement.
But
very short and concise.
I agree with that. I basically agree with that. But there's also what you start with. You start on, in terms of God. It'll tell you in the Bible that the fear of God is the beginning of wisdom. I agree with that. But I also suspect that while you may be drawn to this wisdom by virtue of your fear of God, after you get close enough to God and you're attracted in a way and you focus on him out of fear, I think the moment comes when you begin to say, you know, this guy's pretty cool.
You begin to find
that fear evolve into love. Now, I'm not telling you that's gospel, and I'm not saying it's even true. I'm just saying I suspect it may be true.
That's happening for me. I'll tell you that. That's happening to me personally. And through this metamorphosis that I've gone through, as I've become more and more and more in control of this information, even more so past the book in the last 2 years subsequently, I've come into at least 100% more control than I had of the information 2 years ago. It's incredible what has happened. And the fact that it does turn into that, Al, is it turns into A, simplicity in a way, and B, it turns your feelings. And you become, I'll tell you what it is, you become empowered. I am scared of no man on the face of this earth. And I'm telling you, that's a real empowered feeling right there.
I don't doubt it's an empowered feeling. To what degree, and we've only got about 40 seconds now before we're going to take our next break, but to what degree do you think that's because of your personal evolution? To what degree do you think it's because you've moved to Argentina? I'm going to bet that things are simply less conducive to paranoia down in Argentina than they are up here.
There's no doubt that that's an element of it, but this other thing's an element of it too, because I can feel that personally, you know. I mean, I feel personally empowered, and I'm one of those people that, you know, all the old guys 10 years ago, Aunt Tony Robbins and all that personal empowerment and stuff, well, I feel like that now.
Well, we will talk more, and I think in a second when we get back for our last segment, we're going to talk about the IRS a little bit. I'm Alfred Addis here with Roger S. Sales on Financial Survival. We'll be back in a moment. Please stay tuned.
Countries have denied internet access for their people during civil strife. The FCC seized in-use commercial shortwave frequencies right after the September 11th attacks. No one communication system can be depended on to be there when you need information. You need choices. You need a Ku band free-to-air satellite system from AVR. The AVR system includes a receiver, an LNB, and a 75-centimeter dish. All you need to get on your own is the coaxial cable. The system is delivered to your door for $149.99. That's right, delivered for $149.99. That's the shipping and the system, $149.99. Call 541-225-4659. That's 541-225-4659. Or visit AmericanVoiceRadio.com and click satellite system.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it. Nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cedarstrom, on American Voice Radio Network and Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Addis here in Financial Survival with Roger S. Sales calling in from Argentina. We're talking about things spiritual. We were preparing to talk about something on the IRS, but we've had one call from Joe, and we missed it. Joe's hung up, but Earl has just called. Earl's on the phone. Earl, what do you got for us?
Good afternoon.
Hello, Earl.
Hey, I've got a couple things about you were talking about disarming the police. Well, here's an idea, because, you know, there's a lot of talk about the police state, and the U.S. Constitution Bill of Rights talks about abuse of power, and now we're living under abuse of power. And so what do you do when you have civil government abusing their power? Well, there's and trying to disarm the people who the civil government works for. They're trying to disarm us. So here's a proposed constitutional amendment. Yeah, it won't pass, but it sounds really good, and one day, maybe one state will start ball rolling and put it into their constitution, and that's this. Every election that goes before the people, does this level of civil government, may it continue to bear arms? And it's real simple, yes or no. And if the people say, you know what, this county or this city or this state has been abusing its power, so we're going to take away its power to bear arms, this level of civil government will no longer have the power to bear arms until the next election, where we may give it back to them, or you may decide, no, you're not behaving, civil government's not behaving yet, and you're not allowed to bear arms until we give you permission again.
Earl.
Now, that will change who is the master and who's the servant relationship with everybody.
Earl, if you'll get my book and send in a declaration, get your passport, you can change your own status. You can have access to those constitutional protections again. If you are a citizen of the United States under the 14th Amendment, or if you've declared yourself to be a resident, you don't have access to constitutional protections. They're sitting there with dust on them. Go correct your status, and you can access them again.
That's
the problem. See, the problem is the people don't understand their condition. You don't understand that you're in condition of servitude, and because you're in that condition of federal citizenship, if you will, you don't have access to constitutional protections. You can put 100 more amendments on it, and it ain't going to help you.
You understand what he's saying, Earl? The Constitution, you'll see this more clearly in state constitutions. For example, in the Texas Constitution, in the preamble, it says, we the people have established this Constitution. Later down, Article 1, Section 2, I don't have it right here in front of me, but it says we have established the benefit, this Constitution is established for the people, for the benefit of the people of the state of Texas. And the point I'm trying to make is this. If you want to claim any rights or benefits under that Constitution, you must first identify yourself as one of the people. You can't be a person or a citizen or a bunch of other things. It's a bizarre little word game, but it's important that you pick up on these things and not presume that the words inhabitant, person, occupant, resident are synonymous with people. You got to be one of the people. You got to be prepared to show that and prove it in order to claim those rights. Having said that, you're proposed amendment, well, as you pointed out, it's never going to get passed. I get that, but it still illustrates a point. Whoever has firearms is the sovereign.
Yep.
All right. When they pass laws that say you can't have firearms, they're saying you're not sovereign. When they're passing laws that say we can have sovereigns, meaning we the cops, they're saying we're the sovereigns. Sovereign is never disarmed. It's part of the reason why when you saw these old, you used to watch these movies, these dramas from medieval England and whatever, and when one kingdom fell, they had a war, and when the one kingdom fell and was defeated, what did the sovereign do to signify he'd been defeated? He surrendered his sword. That's right. He gave up his arms. It's one of the hallmarks of sovereignty is the right to keep and bear arms. All right? Could be swords, could be knives, could be firearms, but if there's anybody trying to take your guns away, they're taking away a hallmark of sovereignty. They're denying that you're a sovereign. They're trying to get you to establish a non-sovereign or accept a non-sovereign status.
Earl, I kind of look at it this way.
Thank you.
The whole system
I really appreciate that.
All right, Earl. Thank you.
Earl,
we appreciate
listen to it. Before you dump Earl out here, listen to it this way. The whole system, if you will, is shaped to run under the presumption that you are in this condition of servitude.
Yep.
And until you tell them otherwise, they will run under that presumption.
Right. And why do they have to have a presumption? Why is it presumed rather than openly declared?
Because they can do it sneakily and because they can trick you, you're literally a piece of property. Look at, the example.
That's how they approach you. That's their opinion. That's their presumption. But what I'm getting, they operate on the presumption that you volunteered into the servitude. You go to the 13th Amendment, it prevents slavery and involuntary servitude, but it doesn't prevent servitude. The presumption is that you have voluntarily entered into this servitude by virtue of perhaps signing an IRS form, 1040 once upon a time. And it will be presumed, you volunteered to be one of our servants. Well, great, glad to have you. And send us more money next year. All right, servant. And how did you get to be a servant? You volunteered in. That's the presumption. If they force you into the servitude, I suspect that they haven't done it, although they've devised so many means and to put you in the servitude that it's almost mandatory, but it's not quite. If it were mandatory, absolutely mandatory, it's probably treason. So long as it's voluntary, so long as it operates under the presumption that it's voluntary, it's not treasonous. Technically, they can perhaps get away with this, but if it's voluntary, then you get to say, that's it, I quit, I don't want to play this game anymore. If I volunteered in, I can volunteer out. For me, this is a great Achilles heel on the system. If you're smart, if you're shrewd, if you're astute, and it's not easily done, a lot easier said than done. You have to learn a lot before you feel comfortable. It's possible to volunteer out of the system. Now, we talked earlier in the program, we were going to go off on this article about the IRS director admits taxes are voluntary. And I know you've seen that article, Roger, and what do you think of it? Let me read a little of it from the article. Steve Miller, former director of the Internal Revenue Service, admitted at a congressional hearing that taxes collected by the IRS are not mandatory but voluntary. When questioned at the House Ways and Means Committee hearing last week, Miller told the House of Representatives, David Nunes, that America's tax system is voluntary. When Nunes remarked that the clarification of the U.S. tax code is a voluntary system, Miller said, agreed. Is this significant, or is this true? And where we go with this? Is this a legitimate article and a legitimate opinion, or what shall we say about it? Roger, I don't hear you, and I do hear some peculiar sounds bouncing around on the program, and so I assume that we've had a connection problem with Argentina. We're going to sue Argentina, baby, except they're already having so much financial trouble. I guess they don't want any more. They don't need to be sued by us for preventing the radio program from operating. All right, I'll go ahead with this myself. The article comes from Occupy Corporatism. This is not a major news outlet, and we have to wonder about the credibility. Steve Miller, I don't doubt that Steve Miller, former director of the Internal Revenue Service, admitted at a congressional hearing that the taxes collected by the IRS are not mandatory but voluntary. I'd like to see the text of what Mr. Miller actually said. All right? It's easy to misinterpret things. And the IRS has been arguing about this mandatory versus voluntary issue, I'll bet you, for 15, 20 years. And they will say something to the effect that filing the tax, I don't know, maybe paying the tax is mandatory, but filing is voluntary. I don't remember what subterfuge they used, but this is not a new argument. So we got to wonder, is it true or false? Is income tax, is it really voluntary? And if it is, how did you volunteer in, and how do you end that volunteer, that volunteer status? Oh, I volunteered. And Roger, if you get into this thing, just speak up. If you can hear me, I can't hear you. I can tell you that. All we're getting is, we're getting, you know, it's incomprehensible. I can't make sense of anything that I'm hearing. But if you get on here, Roger, jump in, and if you don't, I'll just proceed. So, question, is it a voluntary system? They have argued at times that the system depends. They've argued that the system is mandatory, but the system depends on our voluntary compliance, meaning that they don't have the resources to go door to door, to kick in the door and say, you owe us $5,000 and you better produce it right now, we're going to throw you in the slammer. They can't do that with everyone. The system relies on tens of millions of people who voluntarily, you don't have to put a gun to their head, they're, all right, I'll pay my taxes. And that argument's been around for, you know, 15, 20 years. They say the tax is mandatory, but filing and complying is voluntary. And there's a confusion there it doesn't make good sense, so I'm wondering, did this article, when Mr. Miller said the IRS taxes are not mandatory but voluntary, did he really mean that you and I can volunteer out? Did he really make that admission? I was hoping to talk to Roger about this, and we would have had a better dialogue if Roger's connection had maintained, but it does not. And my answer to the question, is the income tax truly voluntary? And my answer is probably maybe. Okay, I can't give you an absolute answer on this. I don't absolutely know. I think at bottom, I think it is voluntary. I think if you are astute and perhaps blessed, you can volunteer out of this situation. But they are not going to turn you loose easily. All right? From their perspective, you and I are functioning like whores in a cat house, and we generate income for the madam who's running the cat house. And they don't want to see the little whores run out the door and say, we're tired of getting screwed for the benefit of the madam. We're going to go someplace else. We are human resources from their perspective, and they want to keep us in the status of resources so we can continue to provide money for them and the special interests that support the government, control the government, influence the government at least. I won't necessarily say control, but certainly influence. They want us to keep kicking in so they can live large at our expense. There's ways of doing it. A lot of people have just bailed out. I've seen documents that I believe to be true, 10 years old, from an assistant attorney general of the United States. An assistant commissioner of the IRS, my mistake, that admitted that probably 60 million people in this country don't file income tax returns. Huh? That's too many. They can't deal with that. The numbers, they have just dropped out of the system. They haven't sent them any notices. They've said, hey, I don't volunteer anymore. They haven't made any argument about I'm a sovereign or whatever. They just don't stop in anymore. And in relation to that 60 million people, the IRS is unable to enforce the income tax. And that was a good 10 years ago I saw that document, and I've seen other documents recently that suggest that half the people who work in this country or have income in this country, half of them, more than 60 million, are simply just not filing. That's all. They just say, I quit. And they don't even send a notice. So what do we got? We have a world where people are fed up with the government. They're fed up with the system. They're overtaxed. They can't afford it. We are being driven into poverty by our own government. And, of course, some people are just saying, I can't pay. It's not a political statement, per se. They're not taking a political stand and saying, well, under Constitution, Article such and such, it's, you know, I shouldn't have to pay income tax. That's not it. They're just saying, look, I got a wife, I got two kids, I can barely make the rent and the groceries, I can't afford to pay the income tax. I got to choose between feeding myself and the family or sending money to the government. I don't have enough to do both. And people are sensibly deciding, I'm not going to send the money to the government. I'm going to take care of me, I'm going to take care of the family. So, what do? If you're concerned about income taxes, I suggest that you read and study the issue from as many directions as possible, that you do not leap into any attempt to stop paying income tax until you have done a considerable amount of study and you have become convinced in your own mind, not because you listen to me or Roger or anyone else out here talks about income tax. You're going to have to make the decision because you're the one who's going to sign on the line and you are the one who's going to take responsibility if someone comes after you. It deserves your study. It deserves your thought. But don't be too quick to reach a conclusion. I'm out of time, folks. I'll be back on Monday. I want to thank all of you for listening. Have a good weekend, and may the good Lord bless each of you, me, Roger, and Frank, the producer.
Bye-bye.
I work all night, I work all day to pay the bills I have to pay. There never seems to be a single penny left for me.
That's too bad.
In my dream, I have a plan. If I got me a wealthy man, I wouldn't have to work at all. I'd fool around and have a ball.
Money, money, money. Money in a rich man's world. Money, money, money.